What keeps me diving is the amazing feeling I have as soon as I put my head underwater, where it's peaceful, relaxed, my breathing slows down, I forget about time, space, whatever happened on the surface, and I'm still thankful that after 30 years, this perception never changed, and it's actually a need. So if I'm not diving for a few days, at some point I start shaking and I'm not feeling good anymore. So I need to be in the water, and it can be diving, it can be free diving or swimming. A very strong relationship with the water. I need to see the sea, I need to see the water.
It's episode 35 of Dive in the Podcast with special guest Audrey Cradell. Welcome to Dive in the Podcast, your favorite podcast about all types of diving, scuba, tech, freediving, and more. We cover it all. Every week on Monday, we post new episodes filled with diving news, interesting dive topics, ocean advocacy, and much more. Hi, everybody. I'm Justin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Amit.
I'm April.
And we're the hosts of Dive in the Podcast. Tonight, we're speaking to Audrey Cradell. Audrey is a technical instructor and renowned underwater photographer whose style is famous within the technical diving industry. She founded a renowned technical diving facility in Gozo in Malta back in 2012 before establishing her own company called Audrey Cradell Technical, operating worldwide and specializing in side mount essentials, technical side mount, and cave dive training. She'll be joining us in just a couple of minutes for a great interview. Before that, Amit got a bit of feedback on one of the past episodes. What do you have to report, Amit?
I gotta say, this is entirely, I guess, unexpected for me, but we were out for a dive last week and we bumped into Bob and his wife, Allison. They were there doing a rescue refresher with Dion. It was one of these ones where it took me by surprise because they just walked over and were like, "Hey, you're that guy from the podcast." And I was like, "Whoa, what is this?" So I guess in that regard, I'm highly famous. But
I'm highly famous.
So the really cool part was that they said that they really loved the show and enjoyed listening to it. And so from that end, just wanted to give a quick shout out to Bob and Allison, and of course to Dion for getting them there for that bit of refresher training.
That's awesome. That's really great. Good to see the listeners. Our stats are pretty heavily in Nova Scotia. About half of our listeners are in Canada, and about half of those listeners are in Nova Scotia. So that's pretty cool to be recognized at the local dive site. So famous.
Definitely threw me for a loop, I'll tell you that much. I was just like, I don't know this person, but they're talking to me. And turned out to be a really nice guy, so it was great.
Great. Yeah, no, Bob's awesome.
So we really need to get some merchandise going, by the way.
Oh, yeah, we'll have to do that. Check back on our website very soon for a brand new merch page.
Very soon. Yeah, 6 months.
Very right soon. So in the news this week, actually, I think just yesterday, as we record this, an Egyptian scuba diver is believed to have set a new world record by remaining underwater for nearly 6 days. Saddam Al-Khalani dove in the Red Sea off the coast of Dahab for 145 hours and 30 minutes, beating the current world record by 3.5 hours. His goal was 150 hours, but he had to cut it short due to health concerns. He had a support team of medical experts and fellow divers during the record attempt. The dive video is under review by Guinness World Records. Once they acknowledge that, then it'll be official and he'll have the world record. He had a cool little like rope bed set up he could lounge in and secure himself to. But boy, 145 hours underwater. That's crazy.
How deep was he?
It didn't say. Nothing I found said how deep it was, but it did not appear to be that deep. I think I could see the water surface in the background of some of the images. Shallow.
Did it say what his the healthish concerns were for him quitting ahead of the 150?
I'm not sure, but you know, I've read some instances of these long underwater record attempts in the past, and they are apparently pretty brutal on the human body. So I'm not exactly sure what happened, but he's apparently in good health now and everything. So it's probably just something honestly to do with food and bathroom breaks. I don't know.
I want to do 150 hours to break a world record, or was he like raising money for something or awareness?
It did not say whether or not he had a cause that he was doing it for, although he has done previous records, and so it might just be something he wanted to do.
Yeah, I think there was some indication on there that another person had surpassed his last record, so it could have been as simple as I want to keep my record, and so I keep
feed the ego.
Yeah, well, I mean, whatever it is, I gotta tell you, you look at 145 hours, that's probably to the average recreational diver a couple of years worth of their diving to pull together 145 hours.
That could be more than a lifetime of diving for the average recreational diver, I think.
Yeah, so that's it's insane.
Like, it's a little bit like Neil was saying, right? Some people are eager to come up from their deco stops. I guess he was.
That's right.
He just got to use that leftover gas.
Longest deco stop ever.
Yeah, so that made me think. I read previously that there was a cold water underwater record, so I looked that up before the recording here, and that's only 30 hours in 13 sea water the last attempt was held in, which is like balmy. I think we can do this.
13 degrees, that's joyful water for Nova Scotia.
I don't even think you'd have to really specialize a dry suit too much. I think just a p-valve and you could beat 30 hours without working too hard, especially now with electric vests. Should we email Guinness and get the requirements for that record?
Let's do it.
All right.
I think April said she doesn't feel cold, right? So she probably.
Yeah, she said she doesn't feel cold. So we'll put the smallest, least insulated person down underwater in cold water for 30 hours. What could go wrong?
I think she can do it.
All right. So, Amit, earlier we had a chance to talk with Audrey Cadell.
We're very happy on this episode to have a chance to speak to Audrey Cadell. I must say, being a side mount diver, I had kind of heard Audrey's name tossed around quite a bit as being a phenomenal instructor, but I knew nothing about her until I was sort of forced to get myself onto the Facebook to start communicating with some divers that I was trying to keep in touch with. And I came across some of her pictures and they were absolutely stunning. And, you know, there's just something about the grit and the way that the pictures, they were almost telling you, this is what the diver's feeling in this moment, that drew me into it. And I just thought, wow, I've got to get to know this person. I have to get a chance to like speak to her and, you know, hear about her philosophies of teaching and what led her down that path.
Tell us a bit about the interview.
So I quite enjoyed doing this interview with the team because overall, it's one of these ones where you can see the passion, or you can hear the passion, I guess, in Audrey as she starts talking about any one of the topics that we're dealing with. And there's a question where Nick asks her about how she stumbled across side mount diving. And it really, really does come through there, because what you end up getting is, you know, that sense of discovery is felt. But then she also takes us on this journey where, if you're listening carefully, she traces the evolution of side mount as well as like side mount harnesses, and discusses like in detail quite specifically how some of the setups and configurations evolved and where they fit in one place versus another, whether it be caves or whether it be in wrecks or whether it be like, you know, dealing with heavy tanks in cold water or lighter tanks in warm water. And I think, you know, the ability to speak to her and hear those perspectives coming through with that kind of a passion is really quite unique.
All right, well, let's dive into the interview with Audrey Cadell.
I've been diving for about 30 years, and I've been operating professionally in diving for a bit more than 10 years now. I'm specialized in side mount training and technical side mount activities joined together with holo cave training and cave activities up to full cave level. I operate most of the time in Gozo, which is a tiny island, which is part of Malta in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea. And I spend the rest of the season traveling, organizing some training, mainly in Mexico and lately more in Europe, France, in Hungary, in Belgium, where some former students are joining as well on cave trips I organize.
That's where you're at now. Could you tell us about where you're from originally?
So originally I'm from France, which is where I started diving when I was about 14 years old. That's where I did all my recreational training and died for many years as a French diver. So for those who don't know what a French diver is basically you can go down on a single tank on air down to 60 meters and do unlimited decompression, which is not really promoting the technical diving activities that I discovered actually quite late in my diving experience, thanks to my future technical diving instructor. And that's what changed a little bit my perspective about diving. And I really became hooked to it. Before, it was a hobby. I was going on diving holidays, liveaboard, but not much. When I started technical diving, it became more of addiction, not only for the dive itself, but all the preparation it requires, the configuration, looking in all the details of the preparation of the dive. And I decided then to change my career about 10 years ago when I used to work as a consultant before. I quit my job and I joined my ex-partner in Egypt, where I did all my technical instructor training. I worked there as a safety diver as well. And that's where I started gaining more interest in underwater photography, which was not something I was interested in before, because I thought photography underwater was only about fish. And I'm not a big fan of fish. Well, I like them, but I lost interest into marine life a couple of years ago after diving much. And I started taking pictures, actually, of the technical divers I was training or guiding back in Egypt, and doing it the way I used to do photography on land. I've been doing photography for a long, long time. I worked actually as a photographer for NGOs at the time I was living in Vietnam about 20 years ago. And I was doing black and white photography mainly, that I studied in New York, where I did a bachelor in photography. And underwater, I decided to adopt at the beginning the same style and shoot in black and white. And at this time, I had the proper camera and housing. And the pictures actually became quite popular locally over there. So people who are joining really like them, and I was giving them away the pictures. Mm-hmm. And it's only a few years later, about 2-3 years later, when I started cave diving, when I did my first trip to Mexico, I realized that black and white did not work at all in a cave. You're losing all the nice colors, all the nice light and effect. And I was super disappointed, because that's the only thing I knew how to work with. So suddenly I had to switch to color, which was a new world for me. And I realized as well that taking a big camera, big housing in a cave, well, the kind of cave I like in Mexico, which can be fairly restricted, was not very convenient. Mm-hmm. So I decided to switch, both for my own diving and for training purpose, I decided to switch to a GoPro. Which was a kind of, it was against my religion as a photographer. I used to work in Argentic in black and white, like this old vinyl, when you listen to music and suddenly you're switching to digital and in color and with the GoPro, extracting stills of video. So I'm not even taking picture with the GoPro, I'm extracting stills from the video I'm shooting, which was completely opposite to what I believe was right in photography before. So I don't consider in this sense myself as a real underwater photographer, because I don't use the equipment, the strobe, the camera that photographers use. However, the results are quite good and are matching my primary concern, which is to film students during the training, because that's the best feedback they can receive, instead of having simply oral debriefing. When they see themselves after the training session and we can look into all the details, it's very, very precise. It's also helping me to spot something that sometimes I missed underwater, which is a very good thing as well. And then by the end of the day, when I head back home, my second pleasure is to extract the stills of the video. And it was a passion, and it still is. Not every day, but students seem to like it. So sometimes some of them will book a course asking me, will you take picture of me? And I say, yeah, probably. But it's not the reason why you're coming to me, right? But it's still a pleasure. And in the end, I discovered throughout the years as well, it became a good marketing tool to promote the work I'm doing. So I keep on doing it on the side of teaching.
Well, your photos are definitely very beautiful. We'll link your website and your Instagram to our listeners later on, so people can go check that out. I understand you somewhat stumbled onto sideman diving while looking for somebody's last piece of equipment. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. It all started back in 2010, where I was based in Egypt doing deep technical diving, 100 meter plus, and we were doing a lot of training sessions in the shallows, long hours, practicing S drills and so on. And after a dive, a long session in the shallows, when we walked back to the dive center, which was at the top of a hill, so it's quite demanding to go back up the hill with your twin set and carry the stages and everything. One student realized he had lost his knife, and I still had my suit on, so I said, I'm going to walk back down and I'm going to search for it. We were staying in a pretty limited area, so I thought I would find it, but there's no way I wanted to put back the twin set and carry the twin set back down and up again. So I grabbed a 5-liter aluminum cylinder, which still had the regulator on. I realized, okay, I'm going to need a weight belt to be able to go down with the suit, and off you go. And I entered the water, just holding the cylinder under my arm, and I was swimming around looking for the knife for 10 minutes, but after 10 minutes, to be honest, I didn't find it, and I completely forgot about the knife. I kept on playing underwater, just pushing the cylinder in front of me, And actually, I was finding again the feeling, mixed feeling I had when I was a teenager, partly diving and free diving in the south of France where I grew up, having this kind of freedom feeling that I had lost throughout the years of diving heavy configuration all the time. So I really enjoyed myself. And of course, I felt a bit unbalanced with one cylinder on the side. So the next day, I decided to set up kind of prototype. It was not even a prototype. It was nothing of an harness where I could simply clip two cylinders on my side. So I took two weight belts, one I put around behind my neck, around my shoulder. And I put two D-ring on it to be able to simply clip the cylinder. There was no bungee whatsoever involved. Right. And I had another weight belt around my waist, and I put a cool strap on it for it not to go up. And off you go. So I went with two cylinders. And for a while, that's what we were calling in Dahab was based, because it looked like nothing really, nothing good and appropriate. But it was super fun. It was, there was no buoyancy system. So I was using basically what I had learned to use when I did my first course, CIMAS One Star in France, which is breathing control, using your lung volume to be able to go down and be comfortable at depth. So I had a comfort zone between 5 meter and 30 meter. 5 meter, I had to push to go a bit down, but then at 30 meter, I was getting a bit heavy. But between these depths, actually, it was very nice and comfortable. And suddenly, a lot of people looking at me doing this started gaining interest into it. So they wanted to do a try dive or join me to have fun. And I realized in terms of liability, I could not really take them, because if there was a lung rupture or whatever, I would be liable for this. So I started looking at writing a distinctive specialty for Paddy, which I did at this time. And unfortunately, when I realized that they would charge me for the specialty I had been writing myself, I said, no way. I'm not going to pay for something I'm writing myself. So I gave up at the end of the process to validate the thing. But in the meantime, because I knew Paddy would never validate the standards without buoyancy system, I had been looking on the market at what was existing. And I realized actually MSR camel bag, that's what led me actually to the Razor One, which was a MSR camel bag. And I realized that side mount was existing since a long, long time. So I had not invented anything at all. And I started having access to a range of side mount systems, which were not extensively developed at this time. But on the market, you had the Armadillo, you had a couple of systems like the Dive Right, Transpac, American brand, the OxyCheck, which is actually a hybrid system that I bought. It was one of the first systems I bought together with a UTD Z-Trim. Which is the opposite. It's a very minimalist system. It's only a 10-liter lift in a triangle wing that you can adapt on your own harness. So it was very flexible, and I discovered a lot of pros and cons with this system. And it's only 2 years later, when I moved to Gozo and opened the dive center here, that there was a big change when Steve Martin, who is running Sidemount Essential Courses through sidemounting.com, joined at the dive center, and we started having a lot of discussion, a lot of exchanging point of views. Of course, he was already very experienced at this point, since he had been training with all the Razor team involving HP Hartman and Steve Bogart in Mexico. So I definitely learned a lot from him, and we decided to test new things as well, like the use of steel cylinder compared to aluminium, which can be appropriate as well on side mount depending on the type of steel cylinder you're using. So it really enhanced the way I was practicing on side mount. And it was a time as well when the market was definitely changing. All the brands were developing their side mount system. There was a big boom on the side mount market. Both teaching wise, there were a lot of instructors getting certified, some with actually good training, good level, some with not the appropriate training for it. So there was good and bad, but the number of people specialized in side mount was suddenly developing. Before, there were just a few names: Steve Bogart, Todd Valder for us in Europe, and that was about it. And Steve Martin, that came from the school, and suddenly more names started appearing. Also in the development of side mount parts, because it seemed like that no brand on the market was able to deliver a system ready to go out of the box. There were always some metal part that would be missing or something that needed to be changed. So people like Andrew Goering, for instance, who is operating in the UK, had this smart idea to specialize in, to get specialized in all the metal part development. And it was a great idea. Regulator-wise as well, suddenly all the brands started releasing side mount regulator sets. Before that, you had to find your own parts and make your own set, but suddenly it was coming in a box ready to go, which was great. The good thing is that most of the brands agreed on the standard of hose lengths and so on. The fact you need a swivel, for instance, on the first stage. Some brands with better design than some others. My preference goes to ScubaPro in general. Not really for the quality, only for the quality of the regulator, but the design of the first stage is really appropriate when it comes to the DIN placement. That gives you full access to the valve and full rotation of the swivel, which is not the case when you look at brands like Apex or Techline, for instance, which are okay to dive as well. I'm not saying they are bad, but the perfect design definitely is one matching the one ScubaPro is making. And anyway, at the time I met Steve in Gozo, I started testing much more side mount system as well, so a broad range of other UTD system. Australian brand, which is called Freedom as well. I was given a unit for tests. Another system, which is belonging actually to Christoph Starnowski, that I didn't know at this time, which is called Equis, which is a Polish brand. And very similar, because the system was partly designed by Patrick Widman, to what came on the market a few years later, which was the first version of the X-Deep side mount system, the classic, which I dived and I trained a lot, and I keep on training people on the unit, because it's not the best unit on the market, but it's very versatile. So no matter the size of students you get, it will work for training purpose. And then a few years later, X-Deep released the Rec and Tech version, and I dived myself for many years a mix of Tech harness with a Rec wing, because the Tech wing is far too large for me. And I was not a big fan of the Rec harness, which is a adjustable quick release harness. And I don't think it should be that easy to open, because if it is on the surface, it can be underwater as well. So I went for a kind of DIR Tech harness with the Rec wing. And it was a very, very good system that I used until 2015. Until I burnt it by mistake. So basically I put the system in my box of the car, and my video light, which is about 20,000 lumens, switched on in the car and burned completely the wing, and the light itself was destroyed. So I lost a lot of equipment during one drive. And it was the time the Razer team to shoot another flash mob. And there were a lot of Razer side mount system at the dive center available, and I needed one system from one day to the other. I knew the version 2 of the Razer, so I dived the Razer 1, the Razer 2. So the Razer 1 was, to be honest, not so good. There was no proper inflation system, no proper dumb valve system. The lift of the wing was 6 liter, which is fairly limited if you start adding some stages. So it was enhanced in the version 2. The problem of the version 2 was that the design of the wing was not super nice. When you inflated the wing, it looked more like a balloon, than a snug flat design. There was no proper weight system, so you could slide some weights on parts of webbing here and there. But it was not very, very convenient when you need to add a lot of weights if you dive with heavy undergarments, heating system, and so on. And you're going to need more kilos. Definitely, it was not good for that. So at the time, in 2015, when he was at the dive center, he had just released a Razer 2.5 I had never tried before. And I was lucky enough to have him offering me to configure the Razer and show me how to configure it for future customers. So he adjusted my Razer for me with things which are typically Razer style, not always matching what I tend to prefer on side mount. Like they still use the continuous bungee, fixed D-ring. When I tend to prefer the loop bungee system that came from X-Deep, I like to use a sliding system, sliding buckles that I make myself actually, so I can trim my cylinder no matter the type of cylinder I'm using. Fixed D-ring are okay, but there's always a moment during the dive where your cylinder won't be in trim and there's nothing you can do about it. And every time you keep on, every time you travel from one country to the other, I might be in Mexico diving aluminium, then I will be in Gozo diving low pressure steel cylinder, then I will be in Belgium diving with heavy steel cylinder. So finding the right placement for your fixed D-ring, always take one or two dives where it doesn't look that nice. So having proper sliding system is actually a good thing. So I told HP I would end up going back to what I like. And he asked me, can you try for a few days the proper razor style? I said, yeah, I will, to thank you for adjusting everything for me. But after 2 or 3 days, I came back to what I liked. And we are still friends. We still speak to one another. No, we're really good friends. And I have a lot of admiration for his creativity when it comes to side mount or cave accessory. I see a lot of brands copying one another, getting inspired from one another. HP is one step forward. He always comes with this little part, this idea that makes life much easier. And I really like this in the brand beyond the quality they offer. So I believe, to be honest, on the market from what I see now, and I know some brands are still popular in the US, like DiveRite or Olis. I'm not a big fan of this system. I dived all the versions of the Olis, the SMS-100, the SMS-50, the SMS-75. I understand why they fit the need of the US market, considering they are diving most of the time heavy cylinders over there. So they need to have the lifts, they need to have butt plate, for instance, because there's no need to trim cylinders. Cylinders are just falling. They're so heavy, they're falling on the side. So I understand these constraints. However, I think the design could be enhanced. And what I see now on the European market, Apex is a fake copy of a mix of X-Dip and Razor. And despite the quality of the material used, the design is not the smartest one. So brands like X-Dip and Razor are the two valid ones for me on the market. However, whenever students are coming and they already have their own harness, I'm not the kind of person who's going to say, no, I won't train you if you're not diving X-Dip or Razor. Not at all. I show them the pros and cons of their system. And they realize during the training, actually, the cons proven to be correct. There are some things which cannot work. If the design of the wing is not appropriate, you won't be able to dump the gas, or there's a lot of things you won't be able to access. So I'm still interested in seeing other systems. Some of them sometimes I've never seen, some of them which are homemade as well. I had the chance to spend one day with Todi Valde as well, who developed his own side mount system years ago. Todi is the owner of Protect Sardinia, and we tend to meet every winter in Mexico. He had developed 10 years ago, at the time Steve Bogart was promoting the Razor, that was with a long hose configuration. There was another school from Todi, which was promoting the sandwich system. And the sandwich system is basically inspired a bit from the twin set or back mount divers, where you have one wing in sandwich between two back plates. And the first versions were not so nice, but he enhanced completely the design. And then he ended up releasing his own 2D system. So I think he released lately the TS2, which is very good quality. You can have a wing made of Kevlar, for instance. He's diving two short hose configuration, matching the idea that you should always give what you breathe in case of emergency, which is not really what you have on the long hose side mount configuration, where you need to analyze quickly what you're breathing from to be able to give the long hose no matter what. But spending the day with Todi testing his system and understanding the pros and cons made it really valid as well. So my personal choice is still to remain on the long hose configuration for two reasons. One of them is I'm still a back mount diver, not that much, but I still do some twin set dives throughout the year. And I don't want to lose the muscle memory from one configuration to the other. I have to change. So I want to develop the same automatism for safety reasons. So if I'm diving long hose on back mount, I'm diving long hose on side mount. So it's not creating any kind of risk in case of emergency. The second reason, as a cave diver, if I was to share gas with somebody on the 2D style configuration, it means I would have to give away my cylinder, which is not something I want to do. Anyway, in the cave, so I still prefer diving the long hose. But his configuration has really good points, and he's working really fine as well. So yeah, there are some ways to develop at the end homemade assignment system. If you have the tools for it, the machinery for it, yeah, you could make your own system. And a lot of people keep on doing this. I seen the people coming from the UK that ended up making their own wing, and yeah, so sometimes it's fine. So I'm not very narrow-minded when it comes to side mount. As long as it looks snug and it's properly configured, and it's serving the purpose of side mount as well, which has really cylinder streamline, and not because it looks nice. Well, of course it's better if it looks nice, but if the activity of side mount is dedicated to overhead environment activity, you don't want to have cylinders dragging the bottom or completely floating on the ceilings. That's not what side mount is for. Even if you're diving in open water and your cylinder are floating, somehow at some point it will affect your trim as well. So understanding this fundamental of side mount is important no matter the environment you're gonna dive in.
That's quite a thorough explanation, I think, as a side mount diver. I was basically enjoying that quite a lot. And, you know, I think the amount of things that you put together there, more or less the history of side mount and moving into how the different systems have come about, and acknowledging like the work that was done through Patrick and in terms of streamlining things for X-Deep and the Razor harness is super, super informative.
Thanks for all that, Audrey. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more Dive in the Podcast. Hi, everyone. I just wanted to take a second to thank our sponsor, Torpedo Rays Scuba. Torpedo Rays is a local dive shop in Nova Scotia. If you're not in Nova Scotia, that's okay. They've got a wonderful website, torpedorays.com, TORPEDORAYS.com. All of the scuba gear you could ever need is there. If you can't find it, give Jason a call, 902-481-0444, and he'll be happy to help you out. And in these challenging times, it's always great to shop local. Don't go to a huge, big box. Help support your local dive shop. Buy something you've had your eye on. Excellent time to make a good deal. Buy a gift certificate to use later. Whatever the case may be, Torpedo Rays and torpedorays.com will be there for you. Once again, their number is 902-481-0444 or torpedorays.com.
All right, thanks for staying with us. We're continuing our conversation with underwater photographer and tech side mount instructor, Audrey Cudell. I was hoping I could change the conversation focus just a tiny bit, Audrey, and consider that I had been looking at the fact that you're actually quite an educated person, and you've got a bachelor's degree in photography, two MBAs, one in financial markets and one in logistics.
That's
and
right.
And so I was curious from that, how that has influenced your journey into becoming a diver and how you've used that to help develop your businesses. Because I understand you've started one of the most popular businesses in Gozo and then Tech Only, followed by now Audrey Cudell Technical. How has this all kind of come together for you in terms of using your education?
I believe in terms of teaching how to train people, because that's partly what I was doing throughout my job, dealing with people from different horizons, different culture, different education, having to adapt to these people when I was training them for the former work I had before as a consultant, or working with them on projects to design some softwares, for instance. Being adaptive in your teaching, in the way you're exchanging with the people, definitely helped me a lot in what I'm doing right now, because it's not that different. I have students coming from whatever country, from different background, some of them at a very beginner level, some of them very experienced and wanting to learn more. In the understanding as well, probably, of all the agency policy and standard and how to deal with it and how to put the limit to what is makes sense, what is safe, but also being adaptive in your own way of teaching, I think it helped me a lot. Now, marketing wise, because I didn't train in marketing, but part of my business school study involved some marketing as well, which was not the preference I had. That's something that came back to me since I decided to do this professionally. But it came back actually naturally, not really willing to do marketing. I'm not a good salesperson, and I hate the pure marketing, offering discount and making promo. And I do this simply by a wheel of creativity, I guess. I always like to create things in general. So it started with graphical arts. I used to draw a lot when I was a teenager. Then it turned to photography. Then it turned, when I opened the Dive Center, to architecture, because we had to rebuild completely the Dive Center in Gozo. So making doors, building things actually with my hand is something I really like. And it came back this year with the COVID situation, because we were all locked down. And for a while, diving was forbidden in Gozo. I had to keep busy doing things, and I started making furniture. And now I can't really stop, so I have to stop, because my place is full of new furniture and frames. And so I like to create things for the Dive Center as well. I started developing some t-shirt design and then hoodies design. And not with the idea of marketing the Dive Center. It's just that's something I do naturally when I have some spare time. I'm not somebody who can really sit in a couch and read a book for hours. I have to move. I have to create things. I have to experiment new things. And it turned out to become a marketing tool, which is a nice thing business-wise, but it was not the intention originally. And now I understand, of course, that it supported me in developing a name, a reputation, with pros and cons. I mean, the reputation I built first as a photographer was very nice, mm-hmm. but I was a bit worried throughout the years that people would only come to me with the intent of getting pictured at the end of the session. I'm more interested when I'm training people in the pure training itself than the photography. When I'm shooting them underwater, I'm not looking at the GoPro and how to frame things. I'm looking at the content of the training and what I want them to understand during the debriefing they're going to look at. If I can get good pictures out of it in the end, it's nice, but it's not the purpose. So I was a bit worried to some extent after some years getting a name in the photography field, that it would impact my reputation as an instructor, where people would believe that they just come to me for pictures, which is not the aim at all. It proved out to be wrong. So when I sold my shares of the Dive Center 2 years ago to start Audrey Technical, I was a bit worried. I had a big question mark whether it would work or not. I didn't know if people were coming to the Dive Center because of the Dive Center or because of the training we were delivering. So now I was relying only on my reputation as an instructor, and no, actually it picked up really, really well. I kept on running the side activities I had as well at the Dive Center, which were involving a lot of suppliers and selling equipment. So I keep on doing this under my own name, because I developed really good relationship with a bunch of brands in Europe when I was running the Dive Center for 7 years. And I asked them if they would back me up as well as a self-employed instructor now, and most of them did. I became an ambassador for some brands as well, which is something really nice, because it means you're recognized in what you're doing, which is always an honor and a pleasure. So yeah, the marketing thing was not done on purpose. I know partly how to use it. I discovered how to use it, but I can't really say that my educational background helped me in doing this. It's more something that came naturally.
As I was listening to that discussion there about how you're doing it, actually you're using that education and implementing it into your dive practices. And I think that's actually really cool to see that somebody's is using that background that they have to influence diving in a way that's very thoughtful, which leads me to another question I had, which was surrounding, I guess I would call it your philosophy of teaching. And I came across this when I was reviewing your website, and I saw that you had it set up in a way that, you know, you invite students to come and train with you, but you will even offer them the opportunity to train with you for a day. And if they're not 100% satisfied, that, you know, you part ways, no questions asked. And so I was really interested in this, because it speaks to this piece that you're saying where, you know, you really wanted the training to be a thing that was centered, as opposed to being overshadowed by things like photography or running the business. And from what I've seen, it seems that that comes through. So I guess my question in a bit of a twofold way would be, you know, as students come to you, How do you assess those students to make sure they're at a level to train with you? Because, you know, you're providing some pretty advanced training. And then the other part is, how has that educational background influenced your philosophy of training, if those kind of make sense to you?
I believe when I said before that my educational background has me understanding a little bit how agencies, no matter the agency, work on the market, I don't believe that a diver should be driven by standards. I think a diver should be driven by his own skill level. So when a student, a diver, books with me, I won't ask him much information about his logbook. I never look into logbooks. And to be honest, most of the time when people leave after the training session, I completely forget to sign their logbook. I'm not interested into this. I don't believe that the experience of a diver can be defined only by the number of log dives, because if you've been diving in the lake in front of your house for 10 years, it doesn't make you a skilled diver when suddenly you start diving from a boat, when you start diving in cold water. So the variety of diving you're making throughout your diving experience is what makes you a part of the experience as well. It's very difficult for me, an email, to assess the level of a diver. So a lot of them send me some pictures or videos before they come, so I can have a quick look and understand a little bit better where they are. But it's really after a first session together, after their arrival at the dive center, when they unpack their bag and we look at their harness configuration, their equipment, that I can have a fairly good idea where they stand compared to what where they believe they are. And seeing them underwater, making very simple things on the first dive is an assessment of what we need to work on. And this is related to the fundamental of diving. And so it's like a pyramid of fundamental where everything relies on buoyancy, and buoyancy involves partly breathing control. Then the trim, all the propulsion techniques, the team positioning, and the environmental awareness. And I'm playing with all these parameters to see if all of them are in place, and sometimes it's the case. So we can start building on this to focus on specific training, like overhead environment training. Sometimes there's a lack of skills in one of these parameters. So we will work more on the next session on this one to reinforce what is missing, what can be improved until it's better, and then we can start working on some other things. I'm quite picky when it comes to, so of course I'm a friendly person and I'm not beating students or whatever. But when we work on training session, I really want them to be focused and to give full attention. I realized throughout the years that it's not the number of hours. It's not because you do 2-3 dives a day and you finish late that you make a better diver at the end. I realized when I used to do this in the past that divers who are not used to be in the water all the time get completely tired after 3 or 4 days, and they are exhausted and they are not focused anymore. So I try to condense things in slightly shorter days. It doesn't mean shorter underwater session. And all the underwater session clearly prepared. So we spend a lot of time at the dive center before hitting the water to do the dive basically on the surface. So there's no surprise underwater, no demonstration kneeling on the ground or whatever. Mm-hmm. They know exactly what they're going to have to do. Whatever is performed well, we'll come back for sure by surprise at any moment on the next session, because I want it to become part of their natural skill, not something that has been only brief for the session and then they completely forget about it. So I want them to develop an instinct for it. The sessions underwater, I tend to run only one session during the day. I don't want to spend 40 minutes, 1 hour in the water, rush out, have a quick debriefing already and head back in the water. I prefer to have a long session underwater, which is prepared, and really work on the debriefing part, which is very important. And seeing the result the day after, actually after reviewing the videos, talking during the next land drills of what happened before, and how it's going to be different on the next session, actually works. So the learning curve throughout the days we work together is really nice. Now when it comes to the workshop concepts, I think it's very interesting to see that most of the people attend the training And then there's no date or they won't be reevaluated some years later on the training they have received. And depending on their frequency of practice, a lot of things tend to vanish. Mm-hmm. Or some of them sometimes receive actually poor training and are struggling with a couple of things and they don't know why. So reviewing, for instance, the configuration part or a part of equipment which might not be appropriate just to solve an issue. It doesn't mean the whole training was bad, but looking at points that we can improve together is the aim of the workshop. When I'm not running workshop, I'm one of the Sidemount Essential instructor, part of Steve Martin's team. The Sidemount Essential program is very detailed, and every day we are focusing on different topics related to the pyramid of fundamentals I described before. So whenever a workshop, and after one dive assessing what we need to work on, I will pick up out of the Sidemount Essential actually the skills which are dedicated to this specific point. And so basically we are running one day of the Sidemount Essential course sometimes, and sometimes it can be adaptive as well. So I need to assess this after one session with the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, Audrey, I think, you know, in listening to that, I really respect that philosophy that you have there in terms of the diving and the fact that really what you're, you know, it sounds to me like you're doing is that you're highly, highly personalizing the training experience to the level that a person comes in with. As, you know, as an instructor myself and having gone through some training with another very good instructor, a friend of mine, Dion, he does the same sort of thing where basically he will look at you as a diver and bring you from the place that you are to equip you with the skills so that it's not just a checklist of, you know, well, you've got to do this, you know, this, this, and this. Rather, you know, this, it's this wraparound philosophy of like, we're here to create better divers. And so he will focus on the skills that I think are relevant and necessary for you to become a better diver while still ensuring that you've met all the standards and requirements. But, you know, it's a difference in the approach to training that I highly respect, because I think in many cases we're in positions where people just do not, I think, focus on that part. They're more interested in the, how do we get the person certified versus how do we create an amazing diver? And so I respect that very much from my standpoint.
I also believe that people, most of the time when they are training, don't understand why they have to do things a certain way. So they are following kind of checklists. For instance, mm-hmm. in Sidemount, mm-hmm. the end placement is essential. But I want them to understand why they have to perform some tasks in a specific order, why this hand should handle this thing and not the other. Not only telling them you have to do this step one and step two and step three, and then they become like a machine. So yeah, by explaining them, you do this first because of that, or you're going to do this, do you know why you're doing this first? I think it's important because it makes them more independent in their way of diving. If they understand why they are doing the things, they memorize it and they apply it much better than if I give them a checklist to go through without understanding where it came from and why they have to do this that way.
Yeah, very much. And Ed Sorensen actually talks about that as, you know, creating thinking divers as opposed to robotic divers. So, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, Audrey, this time has just flown by, literally. And you said a little bit earlier you don't like to do the marketing stuff as much, but I would like to give you a good chance here to tell people where the best place to find you and follow you online.
So they can find me through my website on audreycudel.com, which is partly advertising my Instagram account, actually, mm-hmm. Audrey Cudel Photography. And through my website, they can contact me by email. I'm pretty flexible when it comes to a training schedule. So I don't run courses, let's say, from Monday to Friday. So whenever somebody book, if I have some free time, then it's scheduled on this date. I'd rather not have too many people on during the training so I can focus on everyone. So I hardly ever take, depending on the kind of training, more than two people together. Sometimes I'll take three. For a Sidemount course, for instance, it's no problem. For some other more advanced courses, I'd rather have two people interacting together. And yeah, I'm pretty flexible as well when it comes to the location. That's the added value of not being attached to a Dive Center anymore. The opportunity to travel a bit more and train people in different places. So lately I've been doing some workshops, for instance, in Belgium. Sometimes it can be wet session, sometimes it can be dry session, where we just review a piece of configuration together and discuss it. And yeah, and that's about it.
That's wonderful. Before we close, we like to ask our guests the same question at the end. You're obviously very passionate. What keeps you diving?
What keeps me diving is the amazing feeling I have as soon as I put my head underwater, where it's peaceful, relaxed, my breathing slows down. I forget about time, space, whatever happened on the surface. And I'm still thankful that after 30 years, this perception never changed, and it's actually a need. So if I'm not diving for a few days, at some point I start shaking and I'm not feeling good anymore. So I need to be in the water, and it can be diving, it can be free diving or swimming. I need to see it. So I've always lived in my life by the sea. I need to see the sea. I need to see the water. More recently, it's 5-6 years now. I developed an addiction as well for dark environments. I love the caves. I love the mines. So the darkness is bringing even more inner peace to me. And what I want to make sure of, because for many years I thought I didn't want to become an instructor. I thought diving every day would take this passion away. And actually, it was the opposite, because if you share your passion as a job, it's actually a luck, really a chance. When you're teaching something you don't like, you don't have the passion for it, and it's different. But I discovered I love diving, but on the top of this, I love teaching. I love sharing this passion with people and discussing it. And it helps me to keep on learning myself and developing some understanding about certain things to be able to communicate it to the people, which is very interesting. I still love to attend some training myself, so I try to do this once a year. I like to be on the student side. So last year, for instance, I did my Keyside Monthly Breather training with Jacek Konikowski, who joined in Gozo. And I keep on practicing as much as I can on my spare time. Earlier this year in Mexico, I trained as well as a multi-stage cave DPV diver, which was super interesting as well. So I like to sit on the other side of the bench to develop new skills for myself and to see some other philosophy of training as well that might influence the way I'm training, the way I'm working as an instructor. And yeah, that's about it.
That's wonderful.
I just want to say thank you, Audrey, for coming on and sharing all that with us. And we'd love to have you back in the future and dive deeper into some of these topics that we kind of only had a chance to skim over, I think. So it was really appreciate you coming today.
Thanks a lot for diving podcast. I had no idea of the podcast, because you guys are located quite far from Europe. And there are a lot of podcasts that developed lately, but I'm very thankful for Amit contacted me. And I have to apologize for my French accent. I know it's really, really bad when I listen to myself afterwards, but I hope you understood a few things.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. The Google transcript, though, will probably have more of a problem with it when we try to do the audio transcript. Well, that was really awesome with Audrey. I can't wait to have her back on the show again in the future. At this point, it's time to think blue. So, Nick, why don't you take that away?
For this Think Blue segment, I want to chat about how divers can make and record observations about what they see while diving. It's often easy to forget the details or get a feature or color wrong when we're trying to ID a fish or an invertebrate or something that's maybe floating in the water column that looks really cool. I also find that local divers have like an incredible knowledge about the dive sites they dive regularly, especially when they dive them year after year after year. Keeping good notes, you know, augments this knowledge as a whole, and it's especially helpful when, you know, we're observing our changing oceans. Taking a few notes, such as the color, shape, size, markings, such as spots and lines, and any distinguishing or interesting feature that sticks out to you, can go a really long way when trying to remember what it was that you saw. Memory is like often fallible, especially when you do a really long dive and then you have to go home, rinse gear, and then do the long drive home and all of that. And then by the time you sit down with a notebook, you go like, oh, was that brown or was it a brownish green or yellow? And, you know, it makes IDing a little bit trickier. So getting down some details can be really helpful. And then if it's something more complex or you're really not sure, you can also do, you know, a simple but quick sketch. And then you can maybe make some little notes onto the sketch or draw some little features that you're interested in. And that makes it really easy if you want to go back and, you know, ID something in a book, or, you know, email a friend or somebody that knows about the topic that you're, or the creature or the group of animals that you're interested in. And you're much more likely to get an answer out of it. And you really don't need a lot, right? It's pretty simple. You need a slate and a pencil, and that's sufficient to keep you going. And when you get home, you can transfer those observations into your logbook, or if you have a diary that you use to record what you your diving adventures. Or again, you can go back into an ID book and check that out. So if you want to be better at making observations about the natural world, one of the ways to do that is to take notes.
Well, thanks for that, Nick. Making the small observations over time really can show people the way things change. It's amazing what changes over time, especially in the dive sites around here. You see some of the older divers have just crazy stories about what used to be here. So having that physically on paper can both prove and help you remember exactly what's going on. Speaking of what's going on, let's chat with April. Who's our dive girl around the world this week?
My dive girls around the world segment tonight, I'm going to be talking about a 22-year-old girl who actually opened her own dive shop. So her name is Sophie Kinningale, and I think she had a similar dream to a lot of us. After leaving school, she wanted to know how she could get involved in diving, as she worked as a professional diver, teaching courses and that kind of stuff, but realized it wasn't totally paying the bills she wanted to. So she actually rented an old pizza shop and converted it into a dive shop, which has a reception shop, wet room, dry room, bathroom, and she says soon to be a chill out room. So she's all set up now. She owns her own dive shop, and I'm really excited to see where this goes, but I think that's really cool. And myself being 22 years old, it's really inspiring to see someone else 22 years old owning their own dive shop. So anyhow, that is my Dive Girls Around the World segment this week.
Thanks, April. That's pretty amazing. Owning your own dive shop at 22 is pretty intense. I'll be 40 really soon. I don't own my own dive shop either, so I'm really feeling like I'm slacking now. Anyway, thanks again to Audrey Cadell for coming along with us. That was a great interview and lots of information there. Really appreciate that. And thanks to my co-hosts. Nick, thanks for joining us today.
Awesome to be back, as always.
Awesome to have you. Amit, thanks for setting up that interview.
Very happy to, actually. And, you know, again, thanks to Audrey for all of her information, but mostly really for her just absolute willingness to come on the show, because a cold contact from some guy in another part of the world saying, hey, will you talk with us? And she was very, very accommodating. So thank you again very much for that, and happy to be here.
That was really great of her. And April, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Justin.
You can follow the show on Instagram and Facebook with @divein.thepodcast. Our email is divein.thepodcast@gmail.com. You can visit our website, www.diveinpod.com. On there, you can send us a voice message, find links to all of our past episodes, host bios, and much more. On social media, you can follow me at iDiveOK. April's at April Weichert. Nick is at Nicholas Winkler Photography. You can find links to everything we mentioned on today's episode in the show notes or on our website, diveinpod.com. Join us next week on Dive in the Podcast when we talk to Underwater Pat. He's a science communicator, and we'll find out exactly what that is and what that entails on the next episode of Dive in the Podcast. This episode of Dive in the Podcast was brought to you by our sponsor, Torpedo Ray Scuba. Head over to your favorite podcast app to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It's very much appreciated. Thanks for listening.